The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. The contract that Buda Baker received from the Arizona Cardinals today, like, wow, that is the main story here in the Valley. Welcome on in. We will have Jordan Hamm with us a little bit later on. Jordan put a piece up on the website that is very much worthy of discussion, the amount of time, effort, depth, tears, all that, on David Peralta and a young man that I'll let Jordan fill you in on that in about 10 minutes or thereabouts. We also will have Sandy Charles and Michael Fabiano. Something different today. We're going to have Sandy and Michael, Fantasy Football Focus, all things with Michael Fabiano from, of course, Sirius XM and many, many other outlets where Michael can be read, reached at sportsillustrated.com. And Sandy's over there, too. She does some work for them. And she does a good job. Opening comments, of course, are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union. Are you looking around at your auto loans, your home loans? You're looking at your personal situation. Have you considered Desert Financial Credit Union? They've been in the Valley for years and years. There's people that when I announced that they had come on board had reached out to me and said, you know, I've been going to them for 20 years. When I first started going into Desert Financial Credit Union for Sports 360, it was back in the spring, and I've been so pleased with the people there and how they've helped us grow our business. They can help you too, whether it's personal or on the business side. Desert Financial Credit Union, we appreciate their support. Eric is with us. What's new?
Not much. Yeah. Same old, kind of the same old, same old. I wish I was Buda Baker, that's for sure.
So, you know, the Buda Baker contract, I've got the numbers here on my phone of what Steve Keim has done. So Buda Baker gets 4 years, $59 million, and he has zero interceptions in his career. So, and that's the biggest contract that Steve Keim has ever given out. And I'm not calling the Cardinals irresponsible here. He gave DJ Humphries 3 years, 43.75. The David Johnson contract was one that had me scratching my head. 3 years, $39 million. The Chandler Jones contract, 5 years, $82 million. The Tyrann Mathieu contract when he was here, 5 years, $62 million. And Patrick Peterson, 5 years, $70 million. So if we're going to add up the numbers for those six players, it's over $300 million in contracts Steve Keim has handed out. So when people are like, why is the NFL so insistent on trying to play during a pandemic? That's why.
I think some of those contracts, as you mentioned, were good, and some of them were not so good. And we'll have to see with Buda Baker. I mean, they obviously love his upside. I believe he is now the highest paid safety in the NFL.
In the NFL. This was a good day for
not
a lot of
guys. Not just in the NFC.
Yeah, no.
Not just in the NFC West or the NFC.
No. In the entire league. This is a good day. There around the league, there are safeties today and agents who are just jumping up and down for joy because now the bar has been set. Here's the market. That's what the house goes for down the street. Want in that house? That's what it's going to go for, give or take a little bit. So, I mean, almost $15 million a year. And he doesn't have any interceptions. Should I be hung up on that fact? I'm just imagining the negotiations. You know, like Steve Keim is saying, well, yeah, he's done really well. We want $70 million. We have zero interceptions.
I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Buda now. I mean, he went from a rising young talent, I would say, to, I don't want to say he's the face of the defense, but he is definitely one of the marquee players now on that defense.
Well, so Chandler Jones is the face of the defense.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
But if you look at it, you know, Eric, the contracts moving forward, like DeAndre Hopkins, I was told in May that because of COVID, the Cardinals had not been able to sit and work on things. And because they didn't know what the numbers were going to look like. My understanding is Michael Bidwell is, what are the revenues going to look like this fall? What are we going to sell in gear? What are we going to get on this contract? What are we going to get on that contract? And then, yeah, here, Steve, here's your budget for next year. So this contract tells me they know what their budget is for next year. But where's DeAndre Hopkins in all this? Because at his introductory press conference, Steve Keim used the term, one of the best in the NFL, if not the best.
which he is. I mean, the sample size on Nuke Hopkins is much bigger than the sample size on Buda Baker in terms of pure production. But I don't make those decisions, and I'm glad I don't. That's why Steve Keim gets paid a lot of money to do that. So,
do you remember Peter's conversation with us a couple weeks ago when he just casually worked in? Yeah, and there are some people that think that the Texans got out from DeAndre Hopkins because they thought his best days were behind him.
I do remember him saying that.
Just a little, you know, just a little. And what happened here last week? DeAndre Hopkins disappeared, right? I don't know. Let's just see how this thing plays out on that end. And then Kenyon Drake is in a boot. So Kenyon Drake in a boot 3 weeks before the season starts. Am I supposed to be concerned by that? Not really, but however, without much training camp, without being really in the same shape as they've been in the past, oh, he rolls an ankle. It's Chase Edmonds now on the field for the Cardinals.
I guess trying to figure out the back end of what's happening inside NFL teams is like trying to figure out when COVID is going to leave or when we may or may not see high school football. I mean, it's just a guess. I mean, you've seen the Cardinals practices were always pretty tight-lipped. And now this year it's, shoot 20 minutes and then all cameras off. You're more than happy to watch the remainder of practice, but you cannot report what you see.
Right.
So, and we don't have access to the locker room like the good old days. Now it's a coach and two or three players, and that's pretty much it.
And you have no say in that either. But I am getting interested. I think because there have not been the worthless games in August, and because the NBA has been terrific, even though last night the Lakers just chewed up Portland and spit them out. The NHL has been fun. Mm-hmm. The Diamondbacks, I see the ratings. The ratings for the Diamondbacks, even though they stink, are good. And we'll get to them a little bit later in the show. But
I think tonight, Brad, the big storyline is Luka mania, because Porzingis again. He's out for Game 5. So is Luka going to score like 90 points and dish out 40 assists and grab 50 rebounds, and the Mavericks are going to win again? I don't know, but it will get my attention for sure.
Well, and mine too, but I'm going around the NFL now, and because we are less than 3 weeks away, like, I'm really interested to see how Tom Brady does in Tampa Bay. I'm fascinated by that story with Gronk and all that stuff. I'm really interested in the Patriots quarterback situation. I'm interested to see if Aaron Rodgers becomes a little pouty dude if Jordan Love gets to go out on the field. I'm interested to see what happens in Chicago if Nick Foles is the guy and they move on from Mitchell Trubisky. You know, so, and Philip Rivers in Indianapolis is interesting to me. Yeah. I've been reading some stuff out of him getting on players with his dad gummets, you know, and I think that's really interesting. Like, the NFL in September, the last few years, you know, I've had this stance, is nothing more than just more glorified scrimmages in bad football, because the players have been held out. There's going to be some bad football in September, but because I don't have to hear the incessant noise of people trying to build it up because they get a check from the Cardinals or they get a check from the NFL, and instead it's just like, you guys aren't the biggest thing going. You just mind your place, be in your place. And maybe it's because we're not going to have Pac-12 football this year. It's okay. I am looking forward to seeing them. They are interesting to me. The Cardinals are. Kyler Murray's interesting, of course.
And speaking of the Cardinals, another storyline to watch is what's happening right now in San Francisco. I mean, George Kittle is going to catch his share of passes, but Emmanuel Sanders is gone. Brandon Ayuk apparently is hurt. Debo Samuel is hurt, and that's the Cardinals' week one opponent. So we will see how Jimmy G fares, maybe with throwing to a bunch of guys that maybe he's not real familiar with.
No, that's a good point. All right, we're going to have Jordan Hamm on the other side. I want to get him some time on his story that he put together. Did you read it? Did you see it?
I did. It was really good. Yeah, it was really good. It was a really good deep dive. I didn't cry, but I enjoyed it.
And I got choked up a little bit.
And it's good to see there's still a connection in pro sports. Yeah. Sometimes I think we forget that athletes are people too. So
that's well put. All right, Jordan's on the other side. Stay with us. All right, it's Promise. Jordan Hamm is with us, and Eric and I were talking in the last segment about the story that Jordan put up involves, well, I'm going to let you explain the layers of the story and what it was you put together, because it's terrific. If I try to muck it up, I will. So it involves the Diamondback, and I'll just let you take it over from there and how it came to be.
Yeah, so I guess the story from my perspective started when I noticed David Peralta, fan favorite of the Arizona Diamondbacks, had something written on his hat. And, you know, with the way that all these Zoom availabilities are and all that sort of stuff, it's not the typical, you know, you get to talk to him every day or you can just walk up. So kind of had to wait for an availability to talk to David. And it was after the 14-run explosion that they had against the Houston Astros earlier this month. And he hit his first home run of the year. So in the post game, just asked him about what was written on his hat, and it was JM23. And he goes on to say it's for Jacob Medina, who is a local baseball player, played for Perry High School, and he was battling leukemia. Unfortunately, lost that battle to leukemia and passed away in May. And he realized right then, or was reminded right then, that he was dedicating his first home run to Jacob, and got goosebumps right there. And that's kind of where it started. And the more and more, you know, I kind of dug into it and talked to more and more people, it was this friendship that him and Jacob had built really over the course of a couple of months. And David was supposed to visit Jacob in the hospital in February. It was supposed to be a half hour visit. They end up staying, they end up talking for close to 4 hours, and him and his family are instantly connected. And the more I heard about Jacob, the type of person he was at Perry High School. He was the first person that, if a new student from out of state came in, he would go and greet them and, hey, let's take a selfie. He would welcome so many people. There was a story that his parents told me about before a baseball game at Perry. There was a nervous student singing the national anthem, and he kind of struggled through it, and it wasn't his best performance. And you could tell he was not happy with that. And Jacob, before the game, ran out to him, put his arm around him, and said, "Hey, man, thanks for coming. I hope you can come back later. We all hope that you can come back and sing again for us." And that sort of thing. So that's the type of person that he was, and instantly him and David connected. And now it's just not only the legacy that Jacob and the impact that you're still the Perry community is still feeling from Jacob, but also the relationship that the Peraltas and the Medinas still have together. So it was one that I wasn't expecting when I asked that question about what was written on your hat. Yeah. But it's a really powerful, connection that those two families have now, and the relationship, has really continued, and David's even, staying in contact with the family every single day, and talking to Jacob's brother and kind of being a brotherly role, and in his off day, gave his home run ball to the Medinas, met them at the cemetery, gave them hit the baseball, and so it's just an incredible story and a connection between those two families.
No, it's really emotional. I mean, it's really, yeah, really well done. Good work on your part.
Thank you.
And we celebrate those victories. I want to shift over to on the recruiting end and bring Eric in on this. So recruiting roundup this week, you talked about Treyson Borgé. Mm-hmm. Eric, you've admired him, this quarterback at Sal Point, and U of A finally gets a kid to say, "I'm staying home." A big name. It's like, what, Kadeem Carey was the last one, guys, that said, "You know what, I'm going to stay," or am I missing somebody?
I think it's easy to look at the super big time Arizona and Tucson guys who are leaving the state, and you're going to have such a hard time keeping the Bijan Robinsons, the Latham Ransoms, the Jonah Millers of the world in Tucson. But I mean, even in the 2021 class, Stevie Rocker is a very, very good running back.
Okay.
And he's doing exactly that.
Let me jump in here. I want Eric to weigh in on Treyson Borgé, because you were doing some stuff with him and you've seen him. What do you make out of this?
I think he always wanted to go to U of A. He grew up tailgating at U of A games. Jordan would know more about this than I would, but I believe his Tucson Turf 7-on-7 team has a couple other players that have also committed to U of A. And, you know, it's a commitment. It's not – he hasn't signed. It's a commitment. So he is committed to U of A. He is not signed with U of A.
What Eric is saying for the audience is, I'll believe it when I see it.
Kids can change their minds, and schools can change their mind. I think Trayson's going to I think it was smart that he committed, because from what I've been hearing, it sounds like South Point is going to be pretty far down this year, especially considering everything that they lost, as Jordan mentioned, and Lathan and Jonah Miller and Bruno Fina, all the collection of stars at South Point are gone. So now Trayson Bourget is the star, and he has about 6 games of varsity experience under his belt. So we'll see what happens. But he's a really good kid, and he's been really forthright with me, which I've appreciated. So I don't know if I'd say I admire him, but I have a good relationship with him. So.
All right.
And I think the thing is, him, Trayson, and Keon Gray's over at Chandler High School, first two 2022 guys to commit in Arizona, both of them to U of A. U of A's done everything right so far. Now, and they know this. Now it's going to be, they have to fight off everybody else to make sure that, yes, they do put pen to paper. So right now, there's nothing more U of A can do right now. Those guys are committed. They both sound like they're very happy with U of A and what they could grow into. But they knew this going in. Whenever a 2022, a 2023 guy, even 2021 guys make their commitments, we all know that means it's a verbal commitment and nothing is official until pen is to paper. And we've seen plenty of flips over the years as well.
Yeah. And I think, guys, we've been hard on U of A about losing like the
rightly so
the highest of highest raid recruits, but they did sign Jamari Joyner. They did sign Cam Denson. Like, they have gotten some Tucson kids, but I mean, was U of A ever in the running for Lathan Ransom and Bijan Robinson? No. I mean,
what I heard on those, and both you guys can jump on me on this, is they weren't on those guys initially. They weren't on them early enough. Like, how do you not get on those guys early enough? And the same thing for Arizona State with Bijan. They hire Sean Aguano, and they send Sean to Louisiana and Ohio on the recruiting trail the week after he's hired, and Bijan's people are like, hello, don't you have an interest in us? Like, come on, be better to the local guys.
I think also with ASU, and for both of these, those are relatively new staffs, and by the time they're getting their bearings, these guys already have a dozen offers from big-time programs. So they're already playing from behind. So it might have been a matter of just like, all right, we're going to cut our losses. We're going to stay in contact, but we can't necessarily put all the chips on the table for these two guys when they're already developing these relationships with these coaching staffs, and they already have a year up on us.
And it should be noted that Lathan Ransom's first offer was from Cal. So you guys can connect the dots on how that came down.
It's always Cal. No, that's right. It's funny. Okay, before I get the both of you out of here, having both of you, because I'm not saying this because we're teammates, but there's none better than the two of you when it comes to having ear to the ground, confidence and trust from coaches and people in the high school community, and then just your guys' general lens in looking at big picture. To this point, I know that there's angst, and I also know that there's confidence. There's that side of, oh my gosh, we're going to be able to play, and then there's that we're going to be able to play. Who's dropped the ball yet, or has nobody dropped the ball, and it's simply media, guys like me, saying, what are we doing here, guys, in terms of the upcoming high school football season? What do the two of you see? What do the two of you hear? I'll shut up and stay out of the way.
I think that Arizona as a whole has taken a wait and see approach. We've seen, you know, the Pac-12 has jumped out and said, okay, we're not going to be able to do this. We know we're not going to be able to do this. We're just going to do that. I think Arizona on the high school level as a whole it's really tough to unring that bell of we're going to move this to the spring, or we're going to cancel it altogether. and they're waiting it out. Yes, Arizona has gotten a lot better on the COVID front, but I'm no medical expert. You know, the intricacies that come with this are so complex, and that's why there's so much debate over this. So I think that that's how they're doing it. I think that's not necessarily the wrong way to do it, but yeah, it is kind of there are plenty of coaches that are either, we know what we can do today, we're going to do that today. And then there are others that are saying, we have no idea how this is going to work once we take step 2, 3, and 4 here. We're on step 1 right now. So yeah, there's plenty of complexities that have come in with this.
I think the runway is still long, but it's starting to shorten as we get towards the end of August. I was out at Centennial last night talking to their head coach, Richard Taylor, and we were sort of talking about last year's loss to Hamilton. And I mentioned, you know, well, you guys might get a chance to see them, you know, in the first week. And he said, oh, yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. They just took down our schedule today. So the great unknown sort of continues. And I know because of some of the other districts not playing any sort of fall sports, the whole schedule is going to be redone and readjusted. I know Jordan and I talked about this a little bit earlier this week. But if teams are in pads – and we're within, I don't know, 2 to 2.5 weeks of a game one being played, it's only fair to those teams that are going in full pads that they know who they're going to play. And that's not that far away. So.
But does everybody have to be in full pads?
I would think so. I mean, that was the whole reason,
so
the whole reason for pushing back the season in the first place, right?
I would think so too. But I saw where the 3A schedules came out. And the first 2 weeks of October are now blank. So what am I to make out of that? What I've been hearing is they're going to push back again. And then you talk to coaches at power programs. And they're like, that's the last thing we want to hear. We just want to play. And I've talked to too many frustrated coaches, and they don't want to talk publicly about it. They don't want their name attached to this because they don't want their district AD upset with them. They all want everybody to be in line on this and accept this. So I know that fans are frustrated by this, but is it still too soon? Is it, let's just see how September 7th plays out. That's the approach the AIA has taken. But if there's a spring league and it involves the metro schools and it involves the Catholic schools and it involves Glendale Union and it involves Buckeye, involves some of these districts that aren't even on the field, and we have 40 to 50 schools that say, we'll just play in the spring. What do they do for playoffs? How does the AIA support them? Or is the AIA just going to say, well, you know what? These are the dates for our games. This is when the stadiums are reserved. These are the rights fees we're paying NFHS. That's the way it is. Deal with it. I think there's going to be the have and have nots here, which is really unfortunate in schooling. It just really is unfortunate.
I mean, we're kind of seeing it at the college level though, aren't we? I mean, talk about the haves and have nots. 3/5 of the Power Fives are playing. 2 of them are not. And then, you know, the Big Sky is not playing. There are a bunch of other, the Mountain West isn't playing.
Right.
Maybe that's the same route we're going to see at the high school level. I will say this, between the freshman JV and varsity team at Centennial, they have to have about 160 kids that have been working out. They've had one positive case out of 160 kids, and they've been careful. So at some point, like, I think the schools are just like, we need to take this chance. We've been safe. We've followed the precautions, you know, like the numbers speak for themselves in a lot of these districts. It's different in the Phoenix Union. I get it. It's different in Tucson. But how are you going to be able to work through this again if you just keep pushing back the season and pushing back the season?
No, I think Chandler School District is strongly considering following Queen Creek's lead. I'm not just talking in athletics. I'm talking about going into the classroom. I think Queen Creek has become like the test pocket, those kids being put in the classroom. And I'm starting to hear from teachers that have nothing to do with sports, and a lot of them in the CUSD district, which is a big one, of, yeah, they're starting to look and say, well, maybe you guys should go back, because so far we haven't heard anything out of Queen Creek so far. Jordan, you got anything else to add on this one? Or are you out?
No, it's, I mean, like I said, it's just it's a tightrope walk no matter how you look at it. And it's ultimately going to be what comes down to what's best for individual families. And I know that there have been families that we are close to that have taken full-fledged academic waivers. And there have been others that are going, nope, we're getting them right back into school. And so it's a Rubik's Cube for every single individual person. And that's just what's been so tough about this entire situation is, you know, what may not be best for one particular program or one particular family is not the exact same thing for whatever. And there are going to be people that are going to be on the short end of the stick with this.
Jordan, have you had coaches tell you directly in confidence that they don't want to be playing?
Not that they don't want to be playing, but they just more so the logistics of it, of how is this going to work? And how are we going to, make sure that it is fully safe for everybody and that sort of thing. It's more a question. They want to play, but they want to do it in a safe way. And I think the definition of safe is also a gray area as well.
Eric, have you had coaches in confidence say to you, we don't want to play?
No, I have had no coaches say to me in confidence that they don't want to play. I just think that there's going to be, if kids are sweating and bleeding and hitting one another, the only safe way to do this is just to not play at all. I mean, anytime you expose these kids to anything, but like you and I talked about, Brad, like COVID is not a big deal to high school kids. It's a big deal to coaches. It's a big deal to some parents. It's not a big deal to other parents. That's the reality of the situation. But I bet if you polled 100 high school football players, I would guess 90 would say, yeah, I want to play football.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And the high school kids that I come in touch and contact with, they have said, some have said, yeah, it's a little scary being out here. That's as far as it goes. But, I think the coaches are doing the best they can do. Good job, guys. I wanted to get your thoughts on that front. Appreciate both of you, Eric Sorensen and Jordan Hamm. Sandy Charles and Michael Fabiano are next.
And I'm now joined by Sports Illustrated senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. Michael, let's start in Miami. What do you make of this Dolphins backfield?
It's going to be confusing. I really feel like Jordan Howard will be the early down back and the guy who will get goal line work, but they're going to work in Matt Breida as well. He's more of the home run hitter, a guy who could take it to the house anytime he touches the football. Hasn't been super durable during his career. I have Jordan Howard ranked one spot higher because, honestly, it's going to be hard to gauge who's going to be the guy week in and week out. It could be Howard a couple of weeks, then maybe a week it'll be Breida. Maybe they're going to utilize the hot hand. For me, I'd rather have Jordan Howard, but it's super, super close between the two.
Where do you see them going in the draft? Where do you see them falling? Where would you take them?
They're not going to be picked as probably running back threes or fours. I would say Breida is probably more of a four. Howard's probably on the borderline of three or four. But you're not looking at top 50 picks here. These guys are probably going to be off the board seventh, eighth round, somewhere in that time.
Now, how successful do you see Nick Foles being in Chicago with this talent around him?
Well, we'll see if he's actually the quarterback in week one, right? I mean, it could be Mitchell Trubisky because we haven't had OTAs, no preseason, so maybe they start with Trubisky. That's sort of a competition to watch. I'd rather have Foles from a fantasy perspective, but I don't really believe in either one of these guys. Foles has not been able to stay durable outside of his time when he was with the Eagles, and Trubisky was a disaster last year. So more of the interest for me is which guy is going to be throwing the ball to Allen Robinson because he is the most valuable Chicago Bear from a fantasy perspective. And I guess maybe who's handing the ball off to David Montgomery to see if he can bounce back from what was a disappointing rookie campaign. But again, if I'm in a 2QB league, a super flex league, I'd probably be targeting Foles over Trubisky at this point.
Now break down this Lions backfield. You have rookie DeAndre Swift join Kerryon Johnson.
Swift, I feel like, is going to lead this backfield in touches. They didn't draft him where they did to put him in a true committee. That might be what we open the season with. Kerryon Johnson, of course, also a young, talented running back, but he has not been durable at all in his first couple of years in the National Football League. So ultimately, I feel like this will be DeAndre Swift's backfield, but he isn't going to be a true featured back like Zeke Elliott or Saquon Barkley, for example. It's not going to be a scenario like that. he will lose touches to Kerryon Johnson in this backfield, but it all depends on how long Kerryon Johnson could avoid injuries, because in his first two NFL seasons, he hadn't been able to do it.
Is this a bounce back year for Baker Mayfield in Cleveland?
You would think so, right? I mean, like, they added OBJ last year. Now they bring in Austin Hooper. They drafted Jedrick Wills. They brought in Jack Conklin as a free agent. So the offensive line should be better. The options in the offense are better with Hooper in the mix. And Kevin Stefanski is a guy who has done well with quarterbacks in the past, although it's sort of a small sample size. Remember back to his time in Minnesota where Case Keenum had a career season. And Case Keenum, by the way, now in Cleveland. So if Baker doesn't get the job done, I would not be surprised to see Keenum start games for the Browns. And that's if the Browns are really struggling off the gate, out of the gate, and they don't perform well and Baker struggles. Because right now there's no excuses. Baker Mayfield has got to be that guy that we saw as a rookie, or his job could end up being in jeopardy. I'm drafting him late as a QB2. Not a lot of risk involved. He's got a pretty good ceiling. And considering the fact that you're not drafting him very highly, there's not a lot of risk involved from a fantasy perspective.
Now, aside from Saquon Barkley and Evan Ingram, what other Giants skill players should be targeted in the draft?
I love Daniel Jones. I think he could end up being this year's Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes. Not statistically in terms of putting up those gaudy numbers, but just that late round quarterback who ends up being a top 10 player at the position. I really love what he potentially could bring to the table. Can even run with it a little bit. The Giants defense is garbage, which means he's going to have to throw the football a lot, maybe some garbage time points. But all three of their top wide receivers are draftable. When you're talking about Sterling Shepard and Golden Tate and Darius Slayton, Tate's probably got the best floor. Slayton's probably got the highest ceiling. And Sterling Shepard may come with the biggest risk, but he could be pretty consistent too if he can avoid injuries. So those are some of the Giants that I'd be targeting. There's actually quite a few, and that offense could end up being pretty good if Daniel Jones takes the next step, and I think he could.
Is J.K. Dobbins worth a late-round flyer in Baltimore?
He's actually going to be worth more than that, to be honest. He'll be worth a middle-round pick. I love him. If he didn't end up in Baltimore, I mean, we might be talking about him over, say, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, say that the two switch teams. I mean, this is a tremendous three-down back, rushed for over 2,000 yards in his final year at Ohio State. I had over 20 touchdowns. He was among the best running backs in terms of FBS when you're talking about yards after contact. I believe he was 12th in broken tackles among FBS running backs. So he has it all. And Mark Ingram, who had a great year in his age 30 season, he'll come into this year. He turns 31 in December. Looking back at the last 10 years, most of the running backs at age 31 have not performed well. The best two, I believe, LaDainian Tomlinson with the Jets and then Matt Forte as well. And here's the thing. If you take Ingram and put him more into a, not a committee role, but not as big of a role as he had last year, well, he loses value. Maybe he's a flex starter. And if you bring in Dobbins, who is maybe the most talented running back in that locker room, and I think he probably is, and you give him the touches that Gus Edwards and Justice Hill sort of compiled last year, which was over 200, there's enough room in that backfield for two guys to have fantasy relevance. I think that J.K. Dobbins could be a league winner, especially if Ingram should miss any time during the course of the regular season.
Now, Cardinals, Kenyon Drake was at practice with a boot on. Cliff Kingsbury said it's just precautionary. But how worried are you or concerned that this will affect him week one?
I'm not. He actually tweeted out and said, hey, guys, don't worry. I was in a boot at this time last summer, too. So, okay, whatever. You never want to hear of, you know, a guy who's a first-round pick or a second-round pick in a boot at this point. But from everything that I've seen and read, and you heard it from Kenyon Drake's Twitter, he should be fine. He's a first-rounder, at worst a second-rounder. Came in last year after the trade and was dynamite. I will say this, though. Don't underestimate Chase Edmonds. He could make a bigger impact in this offense than a lot of people out there in the fantasy industry are predicting at this point.
Do you project Cortland Sutton as a wide receiver one this year?
In Denver, yes. In fantasy, no. I think he's a wide receiver two. But I also feel like a lot of people in the fantasy business soured on him a little bit when the Broncos went out and drafted Jerry Jeudy and drafted KJ Hamler and drafted Albert O because they've got a lot of options. Cortland Sutton's next level. This guy could be good. In a best case scenario, he could end up being a low wide receiver one in a 12-team league and a 14-team league. Overall, I see him as more as a wide receiver two type The big question mark is Drew Lock going to be able to take that next step in his development as a quarterback in the National Football League and be reliable enough and consistent enough and accurate enough to make Courtland Sutton a stud? That's the big question mark, but I still see Courtland Sutton as a top 20 fantasy wide receiver at worst.
Awesome, Michael. Thank you so much. As always, this is Michael Fabiano, Sports Illustrated Senior Fantasy Analyst, and we will see him next week, as always, too.